To True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus, your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We've been in business about 20 years. We can be reached at 444-0044 in Spokane, outside toll free, 877-827-2646, 877-827-2646, or 877-TAP-COIN if you prefer the acronym. Coins Plus is, like I said, we offer the highest rated privately held depository services available in a very large region, and we respect your anonymity, privacy, confidentiality. We've been here a long time. We plan to be here a long time. And we've just, it's been our goal over the years to help people, to treat them fair, to pay fair, to just run a real small margin, high volume business, to give somebody an alternative. I got into this business years back and I really did not like what I saw. I was a serious collector. Which is interesting because a collector is a very vulnerable individual. When you get the disease, trust me, when you get attached to something as a collector, it literally takes the best of you. I mean, I loved coins, just adored them. And I was at the time a regional manager for Bank of America, and I was traveling a multi-state region. And I spent all my free time just consuming information about coins. I absorbed like a sponge. I haven't really found anyone else quite like that in the industry, although they're out there. I did have one employee for years who I was able to educate pretty well. He had a rather abstract personality. And, of course, ended up that all along he was taking stuff that didn't belong to him. And that was a sad situation, but now he sells cars and I guess that's just the way it goes. So other than that, it's just, everything I've ever done, I've overdone. And when I found coins, it was over. And, when I was a banker, people knew me as the banker and the coin guy. And I began to, as I traveled a multi-state region, I got business cards made up and I began to visit, you know, attorneys, estate offices, pawn shops, antique shops, all over. And I used to spread the word that I was really into coins. And if anybody wanted, you know, me to appraise estates or things like that, I you know, gave my number and everything. And then as time went on, I became more and more connected with people and started to buy more stuff. Got a reputation. The volume started to get a little bit crazy. I would work during the day doing my banker stuff, and at night I'd be out buying estates or collections or whatever. And then I'd be up way too late in the hotels going through coins. That's when I first learned how to deprive myself of sleep in a very seriously destructive way. And then it got to be so overwhelming that I began having to travel to national shows, trade shows, to start dealing, moving, and selling stuff. And I was a serious collector. I was always trying to build collections of every single possible thing I could get my hands on. And then, of course, my dad got into it. My dad grew up in Missoula, Montana. His parents had what they used to call a secondhand store, kind of an antique shop. And he just loved collectibles and old stuff. And once I got into it, he became super interested, and he began doing it too. And despite a very rough upbringing and a lot of tough stuff and some real bad decisions by my parents and just really bad stuff, honestly, God used that to kind of bind us back together and build a really good friendship and, you know, just a real rich, valuable part of our lives. And so that was a real blessing. And then he passed last fall. And so here we are today. Over the years, we've made, as individual investors, not as a business, but as a collector, We've made very good money on coin investments. There's, if you're not around them, it's hard to understand. When you get into the older coins, there was a ton of workmanship. Of course, the quality of the intrinsic metal, gold and silver, and a very limited production. They made very few, and many of them were very rare to get in nice quality. And so despite people's fears of, well, how do I know someone's going to want this for a loaf of bread kind of thing, which is actually never the way things work out, folks. If you have that concept of barter, thinking you're going to run down to the grocery store with an ounce of gold when all hell breaks loose, it doesn't ever work that way. The grocery store runs out of groceries in the first 6 to 12 hours, pretty much first 6 hours. After that, you'll get dented cans of soup and smashed loaves of bread. And then after that, it's every man for himself. And then at that point, you need power. You need spending power. If anything major ever happened, like an EMP, electromagnetic pulse bomb, you are going to need hard assets, okay? You're also going to need weapons and ammo. People think, well, that's ridiculous, Kevin. There's not going to be an EMP. What do you think North Korea's working on, folks? Think about it. North Korea thinks, and I'm going to explain this to you. North Korea thinks that they could detonate an EMP. That's just an atomic bomb. Well, one simple way is to detonate a massive bomb a certain height up. With electromagnetic aftershocks above the area they want to affect, okay? This is why they're testing all these ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles. They have an intention to do this to us. We are their enemy. They have declared war on us. We live in a crazy world, folks. I mean, we have some serious players out there, some seriously dangerous players, and it's sad because the media and the internet lift these people up and glorify them. Even if you think and look at what's happened to our law enforcement just since the introduction of the show Cops, when it began to glorify kind of excessively aggressive or excessively violent behavior from police officers. Over time, that's become worse. The glorification of it just does something. And when you get someone like Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il, and you start to give them major publicity, even as a crazy man, there's a power that they find in that. And if you don't understand, the way you have to think about it is they want to be a 3,000-pound gorilla, okay? If a guy is a, you know, big, tough guy, if he's a boxer, I did boxing when I was young, and boxing gives you some of the best life analogies you'll ever get. Strategy, timing, patience, technique, training, you know, all of it. And if a guy's a big, heavyweight, strong boxer, is he, you know, and he wants to be the world champion, right? Is he going to be offended when the media says, this guy's an absolute crazy, you know, crazed maniac. He's a destroyer. He's nuts. He, you know, he can't be trusted. He needs to be feared. A boxer is going to say no. That they're going to eat that up. Look at Mike Tyson when he was around. Well, that's the mentality of tyrannical leadership, because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So to think that there's a level of rationale there, okay, there is not. And again, back to the boxing analogy, and I say this because this is the psychology of a destroyer, okay, and of a person who's absolutely destructive. Mike Tyson went out and was unable to control himself, and he attacked people violently to the point that it actually put him into prison. because he thought he was invincible because everybody told him he was. And that's what will happen with a ruler like the North Korean ruler, Kim Jong-il, or Un. Il, I get the two mixed up. So I'm just telling you, if this ever happens, and this, folks, from a war perspective, is one of my greatest fears. They have just, I just heard recently that even if Kim, if he detonated a bomb over Hawaii, it would take, they said, like 20 years, an EMP, it would take at least 20 years to get it back to where it was. That's how powerful these things can be. It's not something that we can even get past. It's not something that is simply overcome. And as Americans, I think we actually lose track of this. I really think we do. I don't think we realize the brevity of it. So in a nutshell, what I'm just saying is never underestimate. And another thing, you know, I talked about my passion for coins and just the profits that have been made. I've gone through in previous shows the 10-year swings in values. And they really move like a stairway. You will get about a nice 7-year rally with a 3-year kind of a slowing down and then a small retraction. But the retraction is typically, you'll get a rise, just say hypothetically, if you have $1,000 rise in coins or portfolio, over like 7 years, you'll get a retraction of maybe 150 to 200. Well, that, oddly enough, there was an article done clear back in the 90s and in 96, and it tracked, and it was done by a man that I respect, and it tracked the 10 and 20-year cycles of coins going way back. People don't realize coin collecting is something that's been around forever. And coin investing. It has been, in fact, it's been more so around because coins were history, coins were value. People have collected absolutely adamantly for millennia, folks, all the way back to Roman times and before. From the minute we really started to mint coins for circulation about 3,000 years ago, roughly. Before that, yes, they'd strike round pieces of gold, and they'd also have other tradable commodities where they'd do sheep and, you know, oxen and whatever it was. But coins, as far as a compact form of wealth, what happens with coins is that it's a small, compact, anonymous, immediately recognizable and liquid portion store of wealth. It's a store of wealth. And the reason it's a store of wealth is it's fungible. That means that all of it everywhere is the same. Gold from China, gold from Australia, gold from New York, you know, gold from Dubai, gold from Israel, gold from the United States. It's all the same. Nothing is different. I've had people say, I don't want none of that Chinese gold. And I'm like, whatever, sir. Because the thing they don't understand is, when mints make gold coins, yes, a lot of times they'll mine it out of their own country, but they'll also just buy a lot, melt it down, and mint their own coinage. I've had people say things about how they don't like dragons on coins. Dragons are not always, like the Chinese dragons are not always associated with the serpent. Dragons have been around for a very long time. And a lot of times they're associated with, the early, even like the dinosaurs. And we've read about Leviathan in the Bible, which is actually a dragon. If you read about it in Job, there's just no question. I mean, it's a fire-breathing dragon. It doesn't necessarily have supernatural meaning. The reason that the Chinese, why it became such an obsession of theirs is because their culture has been around for 4,000 years, and they, believe it or not, remember when dragons still walked the earth. And yes, if you don't think that's true, do some research. They estimate the last dragon was probably killed around 1500 AD, and they were caged up and hauled around, and there's stories of them, and, you know, it's just very likely that there's too many commonalities of them. And then the Chinese history shows that they've dug up many, many dragons in certain areas in their country. And this is why the obsession with dragons. They called a certain area the land of the dragons. What was even crazier is the Chinese are the ones that invented gunpowder. They're the ones that invented black powder. They're the ones that invented explosions and fireworks. And in the valley where they found the gunpowder, they also found many dead dragons, or, you know, like I suspect dinosaur bones and skeletons. So they put the two together. They assume that the dragons, the decomposition of the dragons is what caused the black powder to be around them. Perhaps it's true. I don't know. I do know that I believe that there was a lot going on this earth, especially prior to the flood. There's a lot of that information about how the earth froze so rapidly. A meteorite, you know, the pre-flood earth certainly had a hyperbaric chamber. The Bible's very clear that it hadn't rained. It was tropical everywhere. And then suddenly, instantaneously, the floods hit. And, you know, we see animals frozen, flash frozen with food still in their mouth all over the world. And what we find is that, well, what the theory is that someone knocked out someone. A meteorite knocked out the firmament above, which the Bible talked about, which, you know, would have been an ice shell. And it would have initially caused a vacuum effect of as our atmosphere was escaping, it would be drawing in outer space air, which would be so cold. It would be like minus 273 degrees, and it rushed into the earth so quickly that it would literally flash freeze animals. And that's when, you know, the ice age came after the flood. I don't think many people realize how bad the flood would have been. The situation of Noah was dire, very dire. You know, Flavius Josephus's accounts that came down through Jewish oratory history or oral history are terrible. They're terrible. His accounts are just heinous and tough to the point where he wanted to die, which is where you get the stories like that. A while ago, there was a movie called Noah that a lot of it was kind of garbagey, but Russell Crowe was in it, and it came to a point where Noah wanted to give his life. In a lot of the Jewish accounts, that's what happened. And so we had a rapid change in the Earth's condition, you know, freezing things, possibly dinosaurs and everything else. There's a whole lot of information. One thing I started kind of discussing on on Wednesday was what I called the principle. And I hadn't really, my notes were pretty messy and I kind of fumbled through it. And I'm going to try to talk about it a little bit more. What I was trying to get at. Modern science tells us, this is weird, but go with me, that astronomy cosmology is the same thing essentially. It's the study, observation and study of stellar objects or stellar bodies, stars, and whatnot. And modern cosmology is suddenly running into what they call the principle. We have operated under what's called the Copernican principle, from Copernicus, of course, that said we're just in a random place in the universe and there's no real special rhyme or reason to it. And what the principle, this new theory is coming out, is saying, look, it looks to us random, but it's not. Because as we begin to examine what we're dealing with, you know, that we are finding, first of all, that it's so unique. And despite, you know, greater and greater power of telescopetry, we're finding that there is nothing even remotely close to Earth out there. I mean, we're special. Sure, we're far, far away, And folks, I love sci-fi like you can't believe. I just love it. I mean, good sci-fi, not junk, but I mean, I love it. I love the concept of there being other planets. I love the concept of other life. But you know, they always miss the concept of God, don't they? They always miss the concept of God. And it really frustrates me because if this stuff were true, first of all, God has to have limitations on our movement. And as we read the scriptures, there's just not a lot of account there that would justify God's foreknowledge of us traveling light speed, you know, through space. So we're such a tender, fragile, destructible being that it's really unlikely that we're ever going to be able to do that. Outer space is harsh and nasty and huge. And the fact that God made it so huge, folks, you know, it's unbelievable. What, billions of light years of starlight coming to us? And folks, people struggle with this stuff, and it's these are good questions. And the one thing that you've got to think about in faith, there's a lot of people who don't care, who believers who don't want answers, right? And I talk to some of these people, and I go, why do you suppose this is or that? And they go, I don't know. God does this. You know, in Genesis, one scripture that really blew me away was when it tells us in Genesis 2 where there was gold. And then later on, there's other accounts where, so it says, you know, outside the Garden of Eden, these certain rivers come together. And then later after the flood, it says in the same location where these rivers come together, you know. And I'm like, well, the earth has been destroyed by the flood. So how did those rivers reform in the exact same place? I asked two pastors when I was a youngster, and they said, well, God can do anything. I'm like, okay, thanks. But you know, if God's real and he's true, science was created to support our faith. I mean, I should say science was created to observe God's creation. And there's got to be empirical evidence. But the biggest problem is you have a lot of people with an agenda, and they go out of their way to manufacture lies to protect us, to avoid the fact that there's a God. The minute they begin to run into any kind of evidence of a God-volvement, they begin to change and spin the data and the variables. They go out of their way to absolutely eradicate the concept of God. So they've got this preconceived bias that is destroying their view of reality, when in reality, we need to all have a lack of bias in certain areas. When it comes to the observation of God's creation, we cannot have a bias. And it makes absolutely no sense to me. There's some things that I want to touch on today of the extent to which people will go to prove there is no God, like M theory, the multiverse theory, that there's, you know, an infinitesimal number of universes out there. You know how big our universe is. So there's an infinite number of these, and no matter what, you know, we just happen to be in one of them at random, and we just have, you know, it's just a crock. And so they think that all this stuff just happened by accident, and then what? Then we create God in our minds and to give ourselves peace of mind or something, they say. Absolutely ridiculous. Now, if evolution were true, folks, I want you to think. Evolution is just the dumbest theory ever, because evolution is what? Survival of the fittest. What are the most fit creatures on this earth to survive? Well, how about insects? You know, I mean, would evolution really favor us? No way. If evolution were true, we would get bigger and bigger and bigger insects. Destroyers, absolute disgusting destroyers. We would not get warm, fuzzy puppies and beautiful little bear cubs. No way, man. We would absolutely be converting to the most heinous killing machine possible, and it would be the most dark, hard earth. Now, we're definitely in a fallen earth, and there's some pretty bad stuff. Like a friend of mine that went camping and his family got to see a bear tear their tent apart. you know, these are the kinds of things that definitely make you realize there's things you need to fear in life. However, a bear, as impressive as a bear is, it's not a logical product of evolution. And the literally trillions of separate of organisms and species on this earth, it just makes no sense. If evolution were real, there would be a streamlining process. There would be an absolute eradication of most species until you got down to the true survivalists, the toughest and the best of all. Things wouldn't necessarily have beauty. The only color would be necessary for capturing prey. They're just... it's so contrary to reality, it doesn't even make sense. So for people to think that at random, out in the middle of nowhere, you know, this whole concept, everything came from nothing, complete stupidity for beginning. Now, here's an argument. The argument of everything came from nothing, they go to quantum physics. There's two types of astral science. There's the large physics and the planetary physics, and then there's quantum physics. Quantum physics can only be observed, never manipulated, and really hard to measure. And what happens with quantum physics is we, at the smallest level, begin to see matter appear and disappear. As we go to lower levels or with powerful microscopes, as we get smaller than the atom, we begin to see quasars and quarks, and then all of a sudden we start to find things that literally appear and disappear. And it's awesome. To me, it's pretty simple. God gave us a limited dimension to live within, and the appearance and disappearance of matter at the quantum level is, in my opinion, it's moving through a multidimensional space that's a higher dimension than we are. And when we see it, it's, you know, it's moved our direction, whatever the next direction after length, width, and height is. And we see it, and then it appears and disappears. The multiverse theory says that there's entire universes doing this all the time, whether small or large. It's all relative, that they're appearing and disappearing. So, I mean, this is dumb, but I got to tell you. And so to our standards, our universe having been here 4 billion years or whatever it is that we get light from, to, you know, in the big picture, that's just a flash. It's an instant flash. But to us, for some reason, it seems like a long time. And they go on and on with this stuff. It becomes cuckoo theory, okay? Now, your other option is that maybe God created it all for us and maybe we're at the center of it. And you've got to consider that possibility, because that possibility has literally been eradicated from our from any conversation. They considered unscientific foolishness. Kids are taught that if you bring up God in anything, you're absolutely negating science. Absolutely the opposite. The concept of God does not negate science. In fact, science, with an open mind, probably will lead you to God. I grew up Carl Sagan, telling us how we lived on a humdrum planet near a boring star and, you know, blah, 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 and it's just a big old boring place and we're simple, but somewhere out there is probably cooler life. And, you know, he created, you know, life-size jellyfish that float in weird atmospheres and, you know, whatever. Evolution stuff, garbage. So, like I said, despite all the telescopes, Hubble telescope and all this stuff, we don't find any evidence of anything near the Earth's quality. And then, you know, all science, you've got physical cosmology, which is astronomy, and quantum physics. But all science is based on the Copernican principle, and which states that humans, which is us, the Earth, our solar system, are not privileged observers of the universe in any way. We just happen to be where we happen to be. You're not in the best, you don't have the best seats in the house. You just got seats. And that comes from the assumption that space is random, okay? And we are randomly placed within it. And science is changing. The Copernican theory is an assumption, okay? The ancient theory that God is the center of it and we matter to God and all these things is also an assumption, okay? But there's no meaning to the Copernican theorem, and there's 100% meaning to the ancient theorem. In other words, the ancient theorem, the one from the beginning, which, well, you know, this assumption that men were just dumb from the beginning is foolishness. I mean, you know, we start out with Adam and Eve. I mean, these guys had a personal relationship with God. They knew some stuff. Then they passed that on down through Seth. And, you know, the as they say, the wisdom of the Sethites, the wisdom of the descendants of Seth are documented as being unbelievable. In other words, Flavius Josephus, Herodotus, all this stuff comes up in the Great Pyramid studies and many other things of this incredible astronomical knowledge. In Egypt, I've talked about the depleted uranium mines. There's all kinds of stuff that happened there before the Great Flood, possibly, that, you know, there was some brilliant men. The story is these shepherds came, basically went to Khufu, the pharaoh at the time, and said, hey, let us build, let us use your people. The legends say that they took Khufu, the pharaoh, somewhere, and they just demonstrated a power they had, a weapon or whatever that was so powerful. Khufu said, you got it. What do you need? I'll do it. The Great Pyramid does not have any markings on it that are hieroglyphic. All the other things in Egypt are coded and covered. We say they're tombs of the pharaohs. It's foolish. So, you know, there's one good argument that it was a nuclear reactor. I kind of believe it. And that would explain depleted uranium mines in Libya at Oklo, among down the Nile. So the descendants of Seth are supposed to have had incredible astrological knowledge and astrology, basically. And they've basically planted a lot of that in the Great Pyramid because they knew that it would be observed by us. They assume that, you know, Seth's life began around 3600 BC. Folks, that's not that long ago. I mean, that's 5,600 years ago, 6,000 years ago that Adam was placed here. And is the earth 6,000 years old? I don't know. But I do believe that Adam came 6,000 years ago. God set up a system. It shows the fallenness of man, just the fact that from parents who are saying, we're the only ones here, we've been put here by God, and we've got a job to do, or whatever, that their son Cain falls from grace and immediately begins a culture of sin, despite the fact that he's literally sitting there saying, we're the first ones, we're the beginning. And there's every bit of evidence that God exists because his parents are telling him firsthand, Adam and Eve. And yet that is not enough for him to adhere to the faith. And this, you know, goes along with this concept where people say, well, if God came down right in front of me, I love this one. It's crazy because I have heard this so many times I can't even count, where people say, well, if God came right down in front of me right now and did a miracle, then I believe. But you and I know Jesus did it all over the place, and they crucified him. There's something about our fallenness. Why do we work so hard to preserve our atheism, to preserve our spiritual autonomy? We do not want accountability. Are our lives so great when we're on our own? Are they so phenomenal that God would ruin it? Why do we choose the crutches or, you know, the bondage that we let into our life over God? And folks, I understand a lot of things. I know that people have all kinds of addictions. And I know that, you know, when people get addicted to different things, it's brutal to get off. In fact, in some cases, I think some of the psychology is now showing people who have been addicted to like opiates for decades, they can't ever fully get off. Their bodies have absolutely reformed. When kids get on it and they are continuously using pain medication, their entire existence, opiates, their entire system adapts to the use of that. It becomes dependent upon it. And when they go off of it, their lives fall apart. And that's why they run and cause terrible crimes to get it. Totally on a tangent. But I will tell you, folks, as much as drugs are bad, and don't get me wrong, they are. The problem is that so many people go off the deep end. But the other thing is you never hear about the guy that doesn't go off the deep end. You're only going to hear about the guy that does. And for some reason with crime, drugs are very prevalent. So my belief is, and this would never take place, my belief is we need systems to provide people with whatever it is they're addicted to within reason and then taper them off while giving them treatment. There are exceptions because there, you know, you've heard the saying, all things in moderation. I don't think there's any such thing as a moderate amount of meth, but you could give somebody a certain amphetamine while you taper them off and put them through a treatment. There's a theory that says, oh, you know, you want them to go through the most terrible withdrawals ever so they understand how seriously bad it is. Well, that has proven to be a terrible theory. It makes people nuts and desperate and insecure, and it leads to further crime to satiate, to fill that desire. And so, granted, we've got our issues, but at the same time, we've got to have compassion for one another. You know, along the same lines of what I'm just talking about, folks, we are wired for meaning. We are not wired evolutionary. I mean, why would we be wired to go, who am I? What's my meaning of life? What happens when I die? Do I have a spirit? You know, is God real? Why do I feel guilty when I sin and hurt other people? Why is my behavior consistent with what Christ says? Why are my emotions consistent? Now, there are parents now that are raising their children to be sociopaths. And the school systems are doing it as well. So we're actually getting children that are sociopaths that do not properly react to destructive behavior towards others. There's people that are narcissistic as heck. And trust me, narcissism is destructive. And we do see it more and more and more in our youth, don't we? It's becoming rampantly prevalent. And that is threatening, I believe, the future of this nation and the future of the globe. The absolute attacks on Trump, the behavior of the American populace and public, it is sad. It is concerning as can be. And I don't know where, when, or how it will ever quite work itself out. Back to where I was. Early cosmology was philosophy and theory, okay? Now we have data and science. We're beginning to gather data and science. In Genesis, you know, God said to Abraham, look up at the stars and number them if you can. God, you know, use them as an example to Abraham. In the beginning, faith and science were the same. Think about that. Faith and science were the same. The ancient world assumed that the movements of the heavens centered around us. Now, were they idiots? Or was there truth to this? We don't know per se, because if you look at the universe, we can't see the finer outer edges. We just can't cut it that way. But at the same time, there's becoming more and more evidence that we are possibly at the center of the universe as God would have done. You know, things like Stonehenge was coming, you know, showed an earth-centered fixed viewpoint. There are so many things in the early masonry creations, structures that show that we had an earth-centered view. You know, by 1600 AD, a guy named Bruno, was burned alive for proposing the concept that that the universe was not heliocentric. In other words, not around the center of the sun. In other words, that the sun or earth was not at the center of the universe. And they killed him. I mean, this is how, and I always say, folks, whenever the government gets involved in forced science, it's always wrong. It's always destructive. They always thrive on bullying and character assassination. Where are we seeing this now? In vaccinations. Beware. The minute that you see the government or government agencies spending money for billboards to tell you to vaccinate your children or you're a bad parent, that is exactly the time you say, okay, there's a problem here. Whenever the government tries to force this on you, you should run. By 1887, we started to be, have theories of relativity pop up, which led to Einstein, of course, who assumed that there was no absolute perspective, which meant that there was no center of the universe. Everything was just relative to what you viewed. Einstein's theory made a little bit of sense in this. When we say God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, our measurement of days is by our rotation of our earth and its orbit around the sun. And so if everything was perfect at that time and nothing had changed from then till now, it'd be accurate. The problem is we don't know at the time what a day was. God was designing the earth we live in today. And so that's something to just consider. It's not relevant. It's not necessary. What's necessary is to know that God did it. God did it in a certain order, in a certain manner. And if he chose to call it a day, it's a day to him. And what else is really interesting about the Genesis account of the creation, we're finding as we learn more and more and more about science, lo and behold, the order of creation in Genesis is exactly correct. So if you go back to that era and you think someone's just winging it and whipping it out, how in the world would they get the order of creation exactly correct? They have no reason to assume things happen in the way they did, but they did, and they are correct about it. Things like that should make you say, the Bible is a pretty impressive book. You think of all the theories man could have come up with when he was creating a religion. I mean, endless, right? For God, for truth, for, you know, promises. And folks, people say, well, you know, they were polygamous back then. Well, yeah, they were. Be fruitful and multiply. After Christ, things got tightened up a little bit. But at the same time, the theology did not peddle it hardly. Now, if our theology was just man-made and self-serving, wouldn't it really encourage filthy, bad behavior? How would man construct 66 books by 40 authors that absolutely coincide with one another, that all have the same themes, the same theories, the same prophecies, and that are all encouraging us to move towards the better? 40 different authors with an absolute, not only a common theme, but an absolute consistency in their spirit towards that theme. So there are advantages of Einstein. When with the theory of relativity, it depends on how we observe the universe. There's the closed theory, open theory, flat theory, I won't get into that right now, but whether the universe is closed or open or flat is all going to affect how we see what we see. The data appears to show our universe generally flat, laid out, okay? Yes, we've got stuff above us and below us, but it's stretched out like a great big universe. So we've got universes within universes, and God's creation is so far beyond our comprehension. This is where I think people fall and say, this is too much, man. There is no mind, no one mind that could even comprehend this, let alone create it all. But we've got to understand that the Bible says we were created by him in his image. I'm going to shock you, but God's brilliant. You know, there's a possibility he might just be that smart. And the real kicker for me is when people think they're so smart and they're like, well, when I use my brain really hard, I start to question God. And it's like, okay, let me get this right, okay? You just say you are the best computer programmer in the world. Now, you are creating a form of artificial intelligence that can self-heal, be self-aware, self-observed, self-conscious, whatever you want to call it. And that artificial intelligence gets to a point where it starts to go, you know what? I don't think I had a creator. I think I created myself. I think I just happened by accident. I think there were computer parts flying through outer space. They all ran into each other, and they built this amazing computer, this body that I have. And by chance, they did this incredible programming that gave me artificial intelligence. Now, the evidence shows clearly, the evidence is consistent with the six-day account of creation, or the 6,000 years since man. Real science, okay? So not only do we need evolution to do all this, we need it to do it fast. And do we ever see anything evolving at all? No. Do you ever see, a rat coming out of a lizard? I don't think so. So just keep that in mind. So galaxies, we know that the universe appears to us to be more flat than round, etc. And then galaxies are rotating too fast to hold themselves together, okay? Now this is where things get weird. There's no explanation. And there's no matter, in other words, substance, that exists to explain what in the world's holding these things together. So what does man do? Man creates dark energy. And so they come out and they say, well, there must be an invisible matter, substance that you can't touch, feel, hear, smell. And they say, dark energy is more prevalent in empty space than in full space. Then they say, and I remember learning this in college astronomy, there's more energy in empty space than in occupied space. And I'm like, that's weird. Well, I started to think, well, maybe it's like the Matrix. Maybe we live in a huge matrix that's full of energy from God, because after all, there is a magic ingredient to life that man will never get, and that's called the life force. We can't reproduce it. So I thought, well, maybe where there's matter, it's using up that energy, and that's why there's more where there's no matter. But we don't have any scientific proof of this, although it gets taught as a theory that I accepted. So we've got 68.3% dark energy, 26.8% dark matter, 4.9% ordinary matter. So they're telling us there's over 95% dark matter, dark energy. So the gravitational value of expanding galaxies is zero, okay? So the gravitational value of expanding galaxies is zero. What that means is they're not moving as if they were propelled or are being gravitationally pulled. They're just moving, which means they can't, which shows that they may have come from nothing, which is what God says they did, right? So we're looking at something from nothing, which doesn't use the theories, I don't want to get crazy on you, of energies and the laws of gravity. In quantum physics, matter appears and disappears within a vacuum, okay? Then they say many universes appear, many, as in M-I-N-I, I've discussed this, back into the vacuum, and that stuff, it just gets crazy, and I won't get into that. Dark energy allows accelerated expansion of the universe, because what it does, stupid, is whatever you want it to do. So to make numbers fit evolution in the Big Bang Theory, you create dark energy and dark matter, and then you make it do whatever you need it to do to fill in all the blanks. They say God's right hand is God's right hand is relativity and his left hand is quantum physics. The two do not unify, okay? So they're trying to apply quantum physics, the microscopic to the macroscopic. The two don't work. They can't be unified. This is where their difference in cosmology is mismatched. It's off by 1 times 10 to the 120th power in order to feed the theory of the Big Bang Theory and evolution. That's a one with 120 zeros behind it, folks. It's so far beyond impossible. It's far, 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 far greater than all the grains of sand on the earth. It's far, far greater probably than all the sands in the universe. I don't know. It's so impossible that it's not possible. The only way to get rid of dark matter is to reject the Copernican principle. This is where I was going, and I did this Wednesday. If the Earth is at the center, all the motion fits the data without dark energy or dark matter. All of a sudden, everything makes sense. So to prove this, they say, are there patterns? Now, here's patterns means if it's purposeful, right? So are there patterns in our universe? Let's talk about it. There are concentric circles of galaxies that radiating out from the Earth. They're equally spaced at about 0.0246. Those are fractions, so 0.25% of the size of the galaxy, the way we measure it, which equals about 250 million light years apart. So there's circles of galaxies, around us, made for observation. They're only visible if measured from the Earth this way. Cosmologists will not consider, because the consequences, they won't consider this concept because the consequences are too great. Then they have what's called the axis of evil. That's the oldest light. It's cosmic microwave background, CMB, that was discovered in 1965. It should be random if there was a Big Bang. It should be everywhere randomly. All directions around us. The temperature disturbances in the universe all point towards the Earth. They're dispersed in two planes. There's two axes. One's relative to the Earth. They're not somewhere else to be observed, but with the Earth at the center. They align with the elliptics of the Earth and in the Earth's rotation. They align with one is with our Earth's rotation, and the other one is in the plane of planetary orbit around the sun. Those are the two planes of the cosmic microwave bands, which it essentially means we're at the center, like the Big Bang or whatever centers from the Earth, like boom, he created us, and then everything was painted around us. If an interpretation is not Copernican, it is being thrown out despite empirical evidence. NASA is starting to literally remove evidence of geocentric universe from their websites. The Planck satellite went out and came back in March of 2013. This was the one they were watching. This one confirmed what the theory I just told you. It confirmed all this geocentric theory, which was not expected, right? So again, I'm out of time. We're down to the multiverse or God theory. I'll try to pick that up on Monday. Folks, we're going through the vault, and I've got stuff, folks. I've bought and sold nearly $1 billion worth of product over the years. I hoard things, and I've got some special stuff we're putting together. We're making some really nice rolls of early Washington quarters in high grade. And they range in value from a couple hundred up. I mean, we have rolls that go to $1,000, $2,000. Incredible investments, trust me, they're good. They're special. They're once-in-a-lifetime stuff, and they're out of my own holdings because I'm kind of revamping things a little bit. These are available to investors, and I promise you this is a cool, cool thing. They're cool stuff to put away as part of a portfolio or whatever. You know, you don't have to bring in every penny you've got. Some people get concerned about that. I believe that we can help you preserve and protect your finances in a way unlike any other, that you will be secure and comfortable and safe. You can put stuff away if you just have stuff you want to save till you pass on to the next generation, unless you happen to need it. That's what we're here for. We do wonderfully balanced portfolios, but folks, we can build you a terrific portfolio. Trust me. We have a massive inventory, but it's hand-selected. We move massive amounts of product. There's so much stuff that leaves here that we don't offer our investors. I've been hand-selecting for 20 years. I keep it as my own, and then I move it to you. I save stuff until I have my private Christian radio listener investors. This is why we do what we do and how I do it. This is what makes me unique. No other business in the United States that I know of operates like we do. That's why you get the best of the best. So when you buy it, you put it away, we hand select it. It's, you know, what we call original, problem-free, quality stuff. Coins plus 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com. Once again, folks, I don't spend enough time probably on the financial stuff. I should, but I'm just telling you, I know people wish they had more money and all that. Whatever you got, deal with it. But if you've got a 401k or an IRA and you're leaving it in paper right now while the market's just hitting top, 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 you are a fool's fool. You are going to take a bath that you do not want. Take advantage of the market differences now. The prices are too good. Thanks again for tuning in. God bless and have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for your support over the years, and take care. We'll be back on Monday. Bye-bye. Enjoy the sun.